This is Monday, the 26th of June, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, the U.S. Supreme Court rules on the Trump travel order. Coalition troops close in on the remainder of ISIS in Mosul.
I generally believe that one large push by all of the various Iraqi forces would probably mean victory.
VOA's Heather Murdoch will be with us. Also ahead, a long-imprisoned Chinese dissident is released on medical parole. It's all in today's International Edition. The U.S. Supreme Court says it will consider the case of President Trump's executive order restricting travel. In the meantime, much of the order may take effect, says the court. Trump's revised executive order, known as the travel ban, halted travel from six mostly Muslim countries for 90 days and halted the nation's refugee program for 120 days. The order said these steps were necessary in order to revise security screening to safeguard the nation from external threats. The travel order had been placed under restraining orders by two separate courts, one of them in Hawaii, another in Maryland. Both rulings were sustained by separate appeals court, but the nation's highest court took a more nuanced view of all of that. Molly McKittrick is the immigration editor for VOA, and she joins us in the studio. How nuanced, Molly?
Not terribly, but they said, you know, the order can go into effect. We're going to start the clock on the 90 days for the six countries and the 120 days for refugees. But there are certain exceptions to the 90-day rule against the six Muslim countries. And those exceptions are for people who have ties in the United States. If you are a student and you've been accepted to a U.S. university, you may come. If you have family here, fine to come. If you have a job offer here, you can come. But you need to have these ties. Otherwise, you're caught up in the ban.
And if you're somebody listening to this right now and saying, oh, what does this mean for me? I have family here. You have to wonder what's going to happen as far as filling out forms are concerned. What kind of immigration? what kind of checks are concerned? Is this doable? I don't know if it's doable.
Well, there were three dissenting judges, and that's exactly what they said. They said, you know, it's completely unworkable. This is going to flood the courts with cases. And really, what you should have done is just let the whole thing go into effect, and then, you know, run out the 90-day clock and just do it that way.
Well, the court says it's going to take up the whole case in, what, 3 months or 4 months or something like
maybe.
That? And if that's the case, then these 90 days or whatever has run out already, right?
Yeah, that's why I say maybe. They say they're going to take it up, but by then the whole case may be moot because the 90 days will be gone. We'll be mostly through the 120 days on refugees. So why bother?
Again, I think where I want to go with this are people listening now who think they might be able now to come to the United States. And you just wonder what you tell them. How long is it going to take before this is implemented? Are there any details available on that at all?
Well, Trump has said, President Trump has said that they will implement it in 72 hours. There's a press release out today from the Department of Homeland Security sounding like they may be a little bit more deliberate than 72 hours, that they intend to check with various agencies and do this, that, and the other just to be sure. I think that things will go smoothly to the extent they can.
Well, we shall see what happens. And we, of course, will be covering this for you. And Molly, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
I enjoyed it.
Molly McKittrick is the immigration editor for VOA. Andrew Palczewski has now joined us. One would think that this might be a topic of interest on social media.
Definitely. You're seeing Supreme Court trending, hashtag SCOTUS, which stands for Supreme Court of the United States. And already the spin is beginning on social media. The American Civil Liberties Union tweeted out, "We'll see President Trump in court. Hashtag no Muslim ban ever." Trump supporters are tweeting out saying this is their way of making America great again, that the court has solidly sided, unanimously, in fact, with President Trump. Others pointing out that they unanimously decided to hear this case. They did not unanimously decide that it is constitutional or that it should be fully re-implemented, only pieces of it. The ban is set to be argued in the court in October, and many people noting that we are going to have a summer of airport protests. As you'll remember, when the ban was first enacted back in the winter time, There were lots of protests at airports as people were banned from coming into the United States, were blocked from coming into the United States. And social media played a big role in those protests, organizing the protest, telling the stories of people affected by the travel ban, connecting them with lawyers or interpreters. So I think we're going to see a summer of a lot of these protests, and we're going to see a lot of coverage of that on social media.
Well, Trump is, Donald Trump, President Trump has already taken to Twitter. I do believe, and said this is a wonderful thing. It's a great thing, and I guess it remains to be seen.
Yeah, and we've seen statements from Attorney General Jeff Sessions as well on social media. The Department of Justice has released a statement where they say they look forward to arguing this in court and trying to uphold what the president has enacted. So I think we're going to continue to see that kind of reaction, too, from members of Congress and government officials. They're part of this spin as well. I saw more than a few members of Congress who were either defending this ban, saying it should go to the court should uphold it, and then others who are saying that it should not be taken up by the court, or if it is, that they should reject it solidly because it hurts people coming to the United States.
Well, both you and Molly said something that perked my interest, and that is, opponents are going to take you to court. What other court can you go to?
Well, that's a good, the court of public opinion, I guess, is the only other court that we're going to see this debated in before October, and that's
bring new cases, I guess, but it has to go through the whole chain again.
Yes, but the court of opinion is certainly churning things out now, and again, I think this is going to be a conversation that continues throughout the summer. It's a topic of conversation today because the court has announced this, but you're going to see over the next few months people try to spin this, trying to promote their different causes and using online outreach to do so.
Let Andrew know what you think about this by...
You can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL.
Andrew Palcheski here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the U.S. Supreme Court says it will consider the case of President Trump's executive order restricting travel, and in the meantime, much of the order may take effect. President Trump said Monday he thinks his predecessor, Barack Obama, did not react to Russian meddling in last year's election when he learned of it because he thought Trump's challenger, Democrat Hillary Clinton, would win. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi says he's confident in the growing convergence between India and the U.S. as he prepares to meet with President Trump at the White House. The deputy commander of the U.S.-led coalition working to defeat the Islamic State group said the final liberation of Mosul is drawing ever closer. That story in just a moment. Noted Chinese dissident and Nobel Peace Prize winner Liu Xiaobo has been released from prison on medical parole. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA. This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. The deputy commander of the U.S.-led coalition working to defeat the Islamic State group says the final liberation of Mosul is drawing even closer, and ever closer is what he said. British Major General Rupert Jones said during a briefing that Iraqi forces are going block by block to clear the final militants from Mosul, a city that Islamic State seized 3 years ago. Jones also said the fall of the group's de facto capital in Raqqa, Syria, is just a matter of time, but cautioned that battle will not be quick or easy. VOA's Heather Murdoch has been covering the story for quite a while now. Heather, thanks for joining us. Just how close are the forces from retaking Mosul?
Well, I was actually in Old Mosul yesterday, and we could see the area still controlled by Islamic State militants, and it's a very small area. I generally believe that one large push by all of the various Iraqi forces would probably mean victory. The unfortunate thing is that nobody knows exactly to what extent the humanitarian crisis is in that area that they still control. The UN has said there might be as many as 150,000 or 100,000 people in this small area trapped as human shields. So how they go forward is going to be is unknown. It is possible, and we have heard from high-ranking officials that they think it will happen the next couple of days.
Yeah, but how do they? What do you hear about how they're going to deal with all those people who are reportedly trapped there, trapped inside?
Well, they've opened up a couple of corridors, is what they call them, where they've somehow managed to control or protect people on a couple of streets where they can run out. So they're trying to urge the civilians to leave their homes as soon as possible. Civilians that are coming out say that what happens is the Iraqi forces, when they get close enough in earshot of the civilian families, they start shouting, please come to us, and then they run for it while Islamic State militants are shooting at the civilians, and Iraqi forces are picking them up in Humvees and covering them with fire. So civilians are very much part of the conflict at the moment. Some families, though, many families, though, don't really have any route to get out at this particular moment.
Have you spoken to any of the families who did make it out, and what have they said to you about conditions under which they were held or living?
I've spoken to many of the families that have escaped Islamic State territory, and as the conflict has progressed, the conditions have gotten worse. The people I spoke to yesterday that had come out of the old city in the past couple of days, families are starving. There's no medical care. Islamic State militants are saying to people, we are going to die here, and you're going to die too. Either if you try to run, we will kill you. If you stay, you'll die in an airstrike. So when people run right now, they say they were running because it was their only chance of survival.
What happens when this battle comes to an end? There's all kinds of speculation as to it could become a haven for other radical group or even terrorist groups. What's being said about what happens when this battle comes to an end?
There's a lot of confusion about what happens when the battle comes to the end, because it's really a military zone right now, but the military will have to move on because Islamic State militants still have other territories in Iraq. What will have to happen is rebuilding, and you already see some rebuilding in East Mosul. And it's noticeable. You can see streets being cleared and airstrike holes being filled and lights and water running again in lots of East Mosul. But as you said, people fear that it will become continue to be a place of conflict, partially because even before the Islamic State was in Mosul, there was a lack of trust between the people and the government. Which is part of the reason why Islamic State was able to take hold in the first place. So one thing that people fear is that if the reconstruction is not done right, it will start this cycle of violence over again.
Is ISIS regrouping anywhere else?
They appear to be regrouping, or at least still in several parts of Iraq outside of Mosul. The most notable is a city called Talafra, which is about halfway between Mosul and the Syrian border. And it lies on the road between Syria and Mosul. And the this is one of Islamic State's largest, or at least strongest, held cities. It was the place, or is the place, where the prisons where Yazidi women were held after that massive kidnapping and mass executions of Yazidi families. This place has been surrounded by the popular mobilization units, or the Shia militias, for months now. But it still is, it maintains itself as an Islamic State town. Several other towns are still controlled by Islamic State. So any militants that have escaped, and I know that they arrest, they say 20 or 30 a day, trying to escape. So any militants that have escaped, there are places and safe havens for them to go within Iraq. And the Iraqi military forces are planning on finishing the battle in Mosul before moving on to these other places.
Does ISIS have the number one number of people and the resources that are needed to reestablish a Raqqa fortress?
I don't think they have the resources to reestablish that kind of stronghold again in Iraq. I mean, they have been beaten quite badly in Mosul and in several. When I say Mosul, I don't mean just the city. In the entire surrounding region used to be Islamic State territory 8 months ago, and prior to that. I don't think they would have the strength to build such a stronghold here, but that doesn't mean that they don't have the strength to continue an insurgency for a long time, as far as I know.
VOA's Heather Murdoch joining us from the area and has been covering Mosul for quite some time. Heather, thanks so much for being with us here on International Edition. This is VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Noted Chinese dissident and Nobel Peace Prize winner Liu Xiaobo has been released from prison on medical parole. He was diagnosed with late-stage liver cancer last month. He's being treated at a hospital in the northeastern city of Shenyang, according to his lawyer. Liu is 61 years old. He was sentenced to 11 years in prison in 2009 for advocating democracy in China. In 2010, the Norway-based Nobel Committee awarded him the Peace Prize for his long and nonviolent struggle for fundamental human rights in China. You might remember that Liu did not show up. He was not permitted to show up in Oslo to collect his prize, but there was an empty chair there. Joining us is William Ni. He is a China researcher for Amnesty International. He joins us from Hong Kong. William, thanks for being with us. What kind of effect will this release and his condition mean for the Chinese government lying ahead?
Well, I think the most important thing is that they need to do their utmost to ensure that he gets adequate medical treatment. And if it's true that they have assigned 8 specialists to him, then that could be actually a good sign. But, you know, they need to release him unconditionally. If he desires to go abroad for medical treatment, that might be a good option. Now, they've kept his wife, Liu Xia, under house arrest ever since he was detained. So obviously they need to stop that house arrest and harassment of her and let her reunite with her husband. And in a broader sense, they should release all political prisoners like Liu Xiaobo who have been imprisoned for nothing more than exercising their human rights. And this will be a very important sign or a very important case to watch over the summer and going into the so-called 19th Party Congress, which is the next big event in the Chinese political calendar coming up later this year.
Well, William Ni, he is a researcher for Amnesty International, talking with us here on International Edition. Well, women have always been an essential component of Hollywood, but women have found it difficult to establish themselves in roles traditionally claimed by men, such as filmmakers and the leads of superhero films. Well, that ceiling has finally been broken, as reported by VOA's Penelope Pulu.
$500 million and counting. That's right, you heard it right. Wonder Woman, starring mesmerizing actress Gal Gadot and filmmaker Patty Jenkins, have broken the box office record for a female director.
I care about making the greatest Wonder Woman of all time because I love Wonder Woman and I'm a filmmaker. So that nothing's ever going to make that more interesting to me. So the fact that I'm a woman or she's a woman or we're all women or whatever was a wonderful deep part of it. But it also you just tune it out completely because I'm just a filmmaker trying to make a film that I care about that much anyway.
Jenkins's Wonder Woman is the best depiction of Princess Diana of Themyscira so far, because it combines impressive high-action sequences with a great story arc about Wonder Woman's journey, leaving her utopian world to go to the war front during World War II to fight and defeat evil. Jenkins' superheroine model combines power and grace.
Being a hero is often not a proactive state of being of going and punching somebody out and therefore things being over. It ends up being so much more on an everyday scale about understanding and love and forgiveness and the complexity of life.
Next to this great woman is brave pilot Steve Trevor, interpreted by Chris Pine.
I am so lucky that Patty was the one to direct me. Her vision for Diana was in line with mine.
The dynamic duo of Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins is more proof that Hollywood studios can entrust big-budget productions to women. And they're not the only ones. Filmmaker Sofia Coppola recently received the coveted Palme d'Or for Best Director at Cannes Film Festival for her remake period drama, The Beguiled.
Amy! Help! What happened?
The original movie is from the male point of view, the soldier's point of view of this woman's world. And I thought, oh, it would be so interesting to go back and find the book and tell the same premise, but from the women characters' point of view.
The film offers poetic cinematography and an all-star female cast. Nicole Kidman and Kirsten Dunst play the lead roles as teachers in charge of an upper-class boarding school for women fending for themselves during the United States Civil War. Their orderly life is disrupted by a handsome, injured Union soldier seeking refuge at the school, sowing discord and jealousy among the women. Sofia Coppola is only the second woman to win Best Director at Cannes in 71 years, and though many would argue she has an advantage in the industry coming from the Coppola filmmaking dynasty, her talent is undeniable.
Still only 4% of women directed, I think, the major motion pictures of 2016.
Wonder Woman's box office triumph and The Beguiled's artistic recognition are opening the door for more female auteurs in mainstream Hollywood. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to International Edition. In fact, you're still listening to it. You can find us at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. Thanks for being with us. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIS has blown up the famous Grand al-Nuri Mosque in Mosul, Iraq. It was there that ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi declared a so-called Islamic caliphate in 2014, shortly after the terrorist group overran Mosul. The destruction of the Grand al-Nuri Mosque is further evidence of the depravity and the desperation of ISIS and their so-called caliphate, which is rapidly evaporating, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. She added, "We strongly condemn this crime against the people of Mosul, which only further proves that ISIS has no respect for Iraq's identity, culture, or its religions. For nearly 800 years, the al-Nuri Mosque, with its distinct leaning minaret, al-Hadba, stood as a testament to the faith and unity of Mosul's residents. ISIS used the historic mosque, an edifice of a great religion, to publicly justify its criminal campaign of genocide, mass rape, institutionalized slavery, child murder, and aggressive territorial conquest. The destruction of the mosque and minaret are not only crimes against the people of Mosul in Iraq, but the world," said Ms. Nauert. "The world has yet again lost an important part of our shared heritage at the hands of ISIS. The Iraqi security forces, with the support of the coalition, have now liberated 70% of the territory that ISIS once controlled and has now freed 2.7 million Iraqis from ISIS's brutal rule. The U.S. and its coalition partners are accelerating the global campaign against ISIS, taking ISIS leaders off the battlefield and depriving the group of its resources. The United States remains committed to helping Iraq drive ISIS from every inch of the Iraqi soil and ensure that the terror group cannot return. The United States and the international community support the government of Iraq's efforts to help communities suffering from the effects of the brutal occupation of ISIS. The United States stands with the people and government of Iraq as they work to build a future that is filled with peace and prosperity for all Iraqis."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com
/student-union.